Good evening, everyone. Happy quarantine. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Get the Fork Out. This week we have Beverly Grant, who's been in the whole yachting game for a long time in many different facets and in recruiting for now. But we're going to talk about her story and where she's been and where she's going. Great woman. I've known her over 20 years now, and I can call her a friend and a mentor. And I look forward to speaking with you, Beverly. Welcome to Get the Fork Out.
Thank you, Brandon. It's great to be with you in Italy. How nice is that?
Yeah. And you're in Florida, correct?
Yes. Yes. And I was supposed to be in Italy, but my trip got canceled, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh. 2022 hopefully is going to be my travel time again.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm ignoring the rules and still traveling, and I got my little test right here that says I got a day before yesterday tested negative, so it's just a workaround.
So you have to do that often for the traveling to show that?
Yeah, well, initially I actually got a cold in Slovenia. My buddy Robert and I did, so we did a responsible thing and got tested both negative, and then I ended up taking a train from Slovenia to Italy, so I didn't actually need it, but it was helpful. And actually, when you go into restaurants, they ask for this, and I think you can say no and still go in anyway. I think they're kind of easing the populace into having to show proof that you're COVID-free or you've been vaccinated. So,
yeah,
who knows? And every country's different. So.
Right. And it's a whole new world out there.
And, yeah, it really is.
And in yachting also, of course, you know.
A lot of jobs are requiring it.
Monaco show is still on, as I understand.
Yeah, I'll be there.
You're going? Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, I've heard that Flips is still on, but not too many big guys are signing up as of yet. So we'll see how that all plays out. But the crew are coming. The crew are calling me and they're in Fort Lauderdale looking for work. So some things are still that pattern that we've known for years. So thank goodness.
Yeah, there will be some kind of equalization to some form of normalcy at some point, we'll just get used to it, one or the other.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of numb to it, but I'm still a little bit, I don't know if I want to get into vaccines or whatnot, but I'm still kind of like dragging my feet on that for a bit longer, even though it's an inevitability, unless there's some kind of like brand new science that happens in the next 6 months. I have to get vaccinated in order to do what I want to do, including work.
Correct.
So I think we're all looking down the barrel of that gun.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's all right. That's all
right.
I want to be completely transparent too with the audience is that Beverly and I already did this once when I was in Slovenia. And it's a little bit more complicated, but basically I didn't hit record. So we're gonna do this again. I think it'll be better this time, Beverly. We have a practice run. It'll be good.
Yeah. Now who's the dinosaur? IT dinosaur now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, yeah, I never brought that term up, but yeah, I am the dinosaur at this point.
Well, I called myself that because it has been a learning process for sure over the years. I mean, as a chef, you weren't really into the IT stuff back when I started in the 80s and the 90s. You know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have IT on the boats, you know. Things have changed. So here we are in a Zoom interview. And I remember when I interviewed you at Culinary Fusion and we had a great time. You were cooking. I just rewatched it the other day and just cracked up laughing. You've got to watch that. You haven't seen it?
No, I don't think I've seen it in 20 years.
So that was part of my whole concept of advancing as a crew agent with Culinary Fusion back in 98 to do these videos in the kitchen of chefs so that I could send them to hiring captains and owners all over the world. And you and Terrence were my first
Terrence,
two.
That's right.
Yeah. Who
Terrence Booth.
Yes. Wonderful memories and still friends, still in touch with he and his wife, and lots of relationships over the years ongoing for sure. Wonderful.
Amazing. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about like your start as a chef in the industry and then culinary fusion into crew placement, which is what you're doing now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it all started when born and raised on the farm in Ohio, no water whatsoever, but I knew I wanted to travel. I knew I wanted to travel. So ended up in Nova Scotia and bought a 80-foot Grand Bank schooner and decided we were going to rebuild this old vessel. Learned a lot about boats. Learned never to buy a wooden boat ever again. But it was a learning process. And then I got hired as a chef to bring a boat across the Atlantic. And I think I told you this before, and I've repeated it. If I knew then what I know now, I would not have even stepped on that boat tied to the dock, let alone cross the Atlantic Ocean. But what a process, what a wonderful process. And it was safe. I ended up safe. But I realized, hey, this is it. This is my ticket to travel and enjoy what I love doing, cooking and feeding people and doing it healthily. And is that a word? Yeah. Do it with.
I think so.
Anyways, but then I decided when I got back to Nova Scotia that, okay, got to be in warmer waters. And that's how I ended up in Fort Lauderdale and ended up getting in the yachting industry that way. So that was part of the process. That was in the 70s. And you know, of course, Fort Lauderdale, the yachting capital of the world. And we had that discussion whether it still is or not, because even that.
I think it's not obvious that it is or it isn't. I think it's very hard to quantify. But
yeah. And more so with what's going on, of course, with the COVID and all of that. I'm not really sure what's going to happen this fall when boats come back to Fort Lauderdale, if they can even come in, and how that whole all will transpire.
Oh, really?
Through. Well, I've had having people ask me if they're going to be able to come back into Lauderdale. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think our governor will allow that. So I think we're okay.
Florida's kind of loose. I feel like one of the easiest states to, just let it go. We'll figure it out. Live and let live. We'll see who's still standing after this, but very little restrictions. I think it'll be fine because it's revenue coming in, and the boats are still going to, I mean, charters and trips are still going to happen in the Caribbean. The summer season was quite busy. So,
oh my gosh,
unless something drastic changes, I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, you'll have to come to Lauderdale to get supplies.
Yeah. And yes, that did happen. And that was a very busy season from Florida to the Bahamas, because it was one of the few places that boats could go was the Bahamas during all of this last 2020 session. But so anyways, got into yachting as a chef and worked on a lot of great boats. And of course, the boats were smaller then. I think one of the largest ones was Paul Allen's Charade, and I think it was a 160 then, you know, but and that was a big boat when I was cooking on board. But loved it, had wonderful experiences, met lots of people, was able to mentor gals from Australia who I'm still friend with as stewardesses. had incredible learning, culinary learning, because then we had no provisioners in the islands down in the Caribbean. And so we had to source our own food, which usually meant going to the markets, talking to the island women, learning, what is this? I don't even know what a cassava is. You know, I don't know what the.
What do I do with conch? How do I get it out?
Yeah. So yeah, learning experience, wonderful times, great life. And then I started thinking, well, you know, yachting does have some restrictions, such as expiration dates with age. You've kind of surpassed that one. Proud of you, Brennan.
Oh, but who knows? My ticket could get pulled at, you know, any month, you know, and he's just too old. Fuck him now.
But it's true. There are restrictions in hiring and I'm getting more and more so as we get into new money, as opposed to old family money and people owning yachts. So I thought about this, you know, doing the placement and the catering and staying at home. And so that's when I started Culinary Fusion in 98. And I did a combination of the catering and the crew placement and was able to develop a interviewing process with chefs and stews both, and use them in the catering, but also to observe their skills or lack of, and do the crew placement that through that process. And it turned out as a wonderful learning experience and growing experience, and I really had fun with it. And so did Culinary Fusion for the next 10 years in Fort Lauderdale.
And that's when I met you.
Yes.
Like our experiences as chefs overlap somewhat, because I also worked on Charade. I also remember the days pre-provisioners. And then when we met, probably about, it had to have been like 01 at the latest, 02 in Fort Lauderdale at Culinary Fusion. And that was the whole kind of interviewing shebang. And I just helped you out with the Fort Lauderdale boat show. And you had a great way too of like corralling greenies to like help you do catering. It was awesome. It just like, it was such a clever pirate scheme of like, yeah, come on, give me a hand. I'll check you out. I'll find your job. But yeah, come on, let's go to work.
Yeah. Awesome. But I did pay you too.
You did pay me. Yeah. No. It wasn't. Yeah. I didn't get keel hauled or press ganged into it. I actually had to, I got paid. Yeah.
But it was great. And it was great exposure to be doing all those parties at the boat show. And, you know, because then I was, I think, one of the only caterers that had yachting experience. So it was easier to get those jobs in the yachting community. And, oh, boy, we were busy. We were very busy for years.
I remember.
For years. It was fun.
A lot of early mornings and a lot of late nights. Opening up and then coming in and, you know, midnight packing shit away and just like getting the checklist ready for the next day. And it was just hectic. All these events.
Yeah. Right. So big difference from working on yachts and having everything in house. I mean, of course you have to shop, but with the catering, you know, you're hauling everything out and then having, like you said, bring it all back. So long days, lots of work, but I had all you young, able bodies to help, and it was great. It was fun. We had lots of good times for sure.
Yeah, no, it was fond memories of those days. I mean, this kind of leads into my next question too. But let's keep going to what you're doing now, because I want to like pivot to, you know, what Lauderdale looked like then for all those who are interested or not interested, and how that city has changed. I'm sure with the influence of yachting money, it's just a ton of money that rolls through that town just because of yachting, but who knows? It's Lauderdale, it's a vacation destination anyway. But so after Culinary Fusion, you decided to just forget the catering and I'm just going to focus on placement. Is that
right?
Kind of accurate?
Right. So I continued with my company, Crew Solutions, And, you know, I knew then, I had insight, luckily. I'm blessed that way. And I knew that this could be an ongoing thing for me, and kind of like, you know, a retirement sort of kind of job, and still be able to do it. Not knowing then, of course, how much we were going to be doing online and on the phone, yeah, and on the computers, you know. Now, of course, so many people are doing it that way, and all kinds of work, of course. But it's been great, and I've been able to stay in touch with all these young crew, and I have the website. I just got a call, in fact, yesterday. I spent an hour on the phone with a mother of a 19-year-old boy who has decided he doesn't want anything to do with college. He's been in college for a year and he doesn't like it, and that's not where he wants to go. He wants to go on boats. So she called me, and I spent an hour talking to her. She wanted to know if it was safe, what it was like, what the process is. So I led her all step by step through the process of the STCW and the ENG1 and to be in Fort Lauderdale, and advised her, of course, that this is perfect timing for someone to be in Fort Lauderdale, getting ready for all the changes around the boat show time going into the fall season. I mean, it's perfect timing. So I get those calls often. It's fun. I've been able to mentor a lot of people, get a lot of people started in yachting, and it's continuing because of my website. I guess I have that friendly face for even for mothers to call and talk to and trust, and I like it. I like I can do that. You know, it's really a wonderful thing to be able to share that, because my experiences in yachting are incredible and worldly and experiences and, you know, the traveling, as you well know, you've taken it another step also, of course. But it's like, it's a really good life. We're very fortunate to have discovered it.
Yeah, and to encourage people to do it, to get into it when they're young and figure out what path they want to choose. It's
right.
Yeah, 19 is the time to get into it, because you could be an absolute rock star by the time you're 28. Right. You know, have a good chunk of change and a great license.
Of course. And that's, of course, I always talk to him about that. Well, starting as a deckhand, I'm hoping that he has aspirations to go on as a captain. And she confirmed that. And we talked about that process and how, you know, it is part of the process, of course, you know. And
of all the endeavors you could go down as a young person, you know, this is like the least costly. You're gonna be able to save money. Like even if it's not for you, you're gonna come out of it ahead. It's not like you're gonna be broke and destitute and this didn't work out. You're gonna come out ahead, unless you're an idiot. But that can also happen. Beverly, I just want to mention, if I look down, I'm not being rude. I'm just I got questions for you on my phone. So if I look down, it's
okay. No worries. That's good. Yeah. But talking about also starting in yachting at that young age. And she asked me, you know, she said, well, is it safe for he's so young? Is it safe? And I said, oh, yeah, it's one of the safest situations. I said, you know, all these people have to be certified and qualified. And you're working with intelligent, certified, and learning people that are experienced, you know, captains and on and on. And then I went on to say, oh, I wish I would have started at 19. You know, it took me a little longer to find the yachting lifestyle. But yeah, it's a great opportunity. And like you said, if you don't like it, you can get out, you know, without losing much. That's for sure, because there's lots of opportunities to just win-win, you know. I mean, that's how I was able to buy my houses in Fort Lauderdale with money from yachting, of course. And then I And I think about all the people that have worked with me in Culinary Fusion, and who there, I've had a couples from Australia, people from, of course, from New Zealand, all over the world who have worked. And I remember this one couple in particular very well, and I'm still in touch with them, a chef and stewardess. And every chance they got in between jobs, they would travel in America. And I said, it's so great that you're taking this time to see America. And they said, well, we're going to take our money and go home. We'll never come back here. So we want to see America while we're here. I said, that's so smart. You know, I know a lot of people that have made
self-aware
money and taken it back to their country. And it's usually worth more back in the day. And they're doing great. And I've continued to stay in touch with most of them. In fact, I'm planning on to see them next year in Australia and New Zealand. Yeah. So anyways, it's just a whole life of experience.
Yeah. I mean, your experience is incredible, and it spans 30 years. And I guess what'll be interesting and helpful for people watching is what have you seen change, and what advice for greenies, probably specifically like chefs, advice for greenies, how they come into the industry. What have you seen change in terms of like guest expectations or chefs coming into the industry from, say, either really high end restaurants or no experience, or even, you know, maybe a Deki or a Stewie turn chef? Like what have you seen change specifically in the last like 5 years since social media has come on the scene in such a big way?
Right. Well, of course, it is definitely more available for people to learn about the yachting because of social media, even shows like Below Deck. You know, we've talked briefly about that before.
We can go back there.
I'll try to not voice my opinion too much on that, but it's a learning experience and not necessarily the true life, of course, but
it's got some accuracies. If you don't want to talk about Below Deck, we don't have to, but I think people would want to hear about it. I mean, right? I don't have to pull any punches. That doesn't bother me, like, whatever.
Well, I will tell you that when my mother was living with me, I wouldn't allow her to watch it because I didn't want her to think that was the way I lived. Because, so some of those things are true. When we party hardy and in between working. But they don't really show how much work it really is in yachting, you know, accurately. Because it's a lot of work.
I think the timeline is a bit skewed, where all the trips are short 3-day trips, where those rarely happen in yachting. Let's be honest. And since COVID, they're even longer. Talk about, you know, 3-week minimum, up to 10 weeks.
Right.
You work really hard, get the boat ready, show the guests the best experience possible in every facet of the industry, of the game. And then, you go take your tip money. It can be a wad of cash, can be an electron deposit, and you go party and get ready for the next one. And that's kind of your summer. And you might not get just a handful of days off in 4 or 5 months when you're in the summer in the Med. It's so crazy busy. So my opinion on that show, and I want to hear yours, is that it's Bush League. They hire a bunch of crazy people on purpose because it's reality TV. But the timeline is accurate. And what I do appreciate about that show, because I hated it first, raged against it, as most yachties did, is that at least now when I meet people that are outside of the industry, they've maybe seen that show. So now I don't have to hear a cruise ship story. You know, now I don't have to hear like, oh, we went on a cruise ship once. I'm like, that's not what I do. It's not even close. So at least now there's some sort of like barometer in terms of what people may or may not know about the industry. And you can just be like, no, that is not what I do, but it is what I do. What do you think?
True, exactly. I had the same thing. All of my family and cousins from Ohio thought I was working on a cruise ship. And right. So, yeah, there is a point of reference now. But, you know, it's interesting, but I don't think it's a good career move to be on that show, although a few have done okay with it. Yeah. You know, I love Captain Sandy. I love her dearly. And I think she's awesome. I mean, that's how a captain should be as far as getting all the deckhands to be able to maneuver the boat and learn. She's a teacher, and she showed it very well on the show. But like you said, it's Bravo. They create drama, so they make it worse. And you think about those short term, those people that are chartering want to be stars, whereas most of the people they want to, you know, most of the people that we've catered to and chartered for, they don't even want acknowledgement. They're more low key. That, you know,
even,
and
the
that's
guests are a bit nuts on that show.
Exactly. So, you know, I will give you an experience of something that just happened because of Below a Deck. A gal I know very well worked as chief stew, and she came back off the show and got her dream job as chief stew on a big boat. And the owners, after they hired her, saw the trailer of the new season, and they let her go because of her being on that show. They said, our backgrounds, our social preferences are totally different. So she lost the job because of being on the show. And I actually had said to her previous to her filming, I said, this will change your life forever, being on this show. And there's a perfect example of it changing. You know, it's
that's a blessing in disguise. Because maybe that relationship wouldn't have fit anyway. You know, maybe those people are assholes, and
I agree.
That would have been like a grimacing, like 6 months or a year of torture, and it's just like, my Lord, it's paying off now.
Yeah, basically that's what I told her to reassure her. I said, you know, this is a blessing. You know, better now than later. So,
and there could be three or four other boats that are being attracted to her personality or whatever she's doing, whatever hedonistic thing she's doing. I don't know. But there's other people that it could open a lot of doors as well.
Right. But
not
as far as
the show altogether or any of the crew that have been on it, it's just, it's interesting to watch it change over the years. Like, it starts out as this fad. You're like, no way. There's a yachting show on TV on Bravo. This, at the time, a channel no one even cared about. You know, Bourdain had just barely gotten on there, I think. And, yeah, to watch it change and to be mainstream and to be like the most popular show on a network. It's, you know, it's here to stay, and it's, whatever. Yeah. It's just what it is. Normal now.
Yeah. But as far as changes in general, I think that our clients are changing. I think the yacht owners are different than they were 10 years ago. Partially because of IT money, you know. Nouveau Riche, it's a whole different concept, a whole different background, or a lack of background of money that are now our clients in yachting. As far as the placement agencies, they're demanding younger, prettier, cleaner, healthier crew than they did before. So yes, that is affecting my placement. A lot of the captains are so much younger than they were. So they don't want anyone older than them, just in general speaking. So yeah, things are changing. I'm running out of American crew, but I think it's mostly been because of the busy Bahama season that we've had because of COVID. Boats are Florida, Bahamas.
And just to be clear, that Bahama season you're talking about the summer or the last winter?
No, actually it's ongoing because of COVID.
Yeah.
They're
because I knew there was a lot of boats. I've done a few summers in the Bahamas. You know, it's blazing hot, but the fishing is great and the diving is great. So a few boats will be there. And now it sounds like there's a lot more.
Oh, there's a lot more. It's been packed since 2020, since COVID, because that's the only place they could really go. And so that's changed things, a lot busier schedules going back and forth. Provisioning is still happening in Fort Lauderdale. Food is still available. And all my friends that do provisioning, they're very busy. They're jammed. And luckily, food is not.
I want to comment on that provisioning too, is like, because I know for myself as a chef, like I'm not allowed to go to the store most of the time. So the provisioners are actually, this is a boom for them because, you know, there's no more shopping on your own anymore. Or very little. It depends on the boat, depends on the situation. But I've noticed that with the charters that I've done that have been like a quarantine charter, it's like, no crew are going ashore. I'm like, all right, we're using provisioners then.
Well, that really hasn't happened in Florida. There's been no restrictions, not very many restrictions, shall I say, with shopping. There's still shopping, but there are a lot more owners that are staying on board full time. And they'll set those rules. You can't go out. You can't go shopping. Yeah. You can't go to the bars. But some crew are escaping and going out and unfortunately bringing COVID back to the boat. Hear a lot of stories about that for sure. But that's new that owners are staying on board. That's kind of a new thing because of what's happening. Right.
Yeah, it would happen. There were some member like my Maryland. There were some like live aboard owners in the industry that you knew. I love how much that made you laugh because you know exactly what I'm talking about. Every green you had to pass through this one boat that sat in Fort Lauderdale, and you'd last about a month and get sacked or quit one or the other. And it was just such a nightmare. But yeah, so it's funny. More and more now because same with IT and everyone working remotely is like these wealthy individuals have figured out. Well, I can run my massive business from the yacht.
Exactly. And of course, the communication companies are busier and more demanding because my dear friends is involved in that circle, and she's just swamped with, you know, keeping things updated and updating more and more power to the owner, IT wise. You know, it has changed a lot of things for sure. But like you said, we'll find our new normalcy if there ever will be one.
We have to. We just will. I mean, humans are very adaptable. We'll figure it out.
And luckily, because of what you're doing, this great series, I mean, people are watching and learning more about the new normal and the yachting and the chefing and everything. Thanks for doing Get the Fork Out. Up.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's fun for me to share this this knowledge and all these like wonderful people that I met in the industry. Whether it's doing good, I don't know. It's probably not doing any harm, but the audience is small now. But I just think it's fun. I like doing it. It's just and whatever I can share, I'll share.
Right. Good. Thank you. Yeah, there's more of this kind of situation going on. I have another chef friend who's doing a lot of education in culinary this way also. And sharing worldwide food information and knowledge, which is wonderful that we can learn so much more. I mean, like I said, I learned it by going off the boat and going to an island. I'd never heard of half of this food. I had one charter. I have to share this story. It's kind of funny. We were anchored off St. Vincent. And we had kids on board. So I had a demand of more milk than you'd normally have on board. And of course you can only keep it so long, even though I had a wonderful big walk-in refrigerator in the day that was unheard of in the 80s, but I did.
Oh, on charade?
No, this was on a boat called Safe Conduct. It was a one-off built down in Morgan City. She was only 120 foot, but I had an actual walk-in fridge and freezer, which was, I really agreed in the 80s, that was unheard of. But anyway, so I said to the mate, can you go to shore and get me some more milk? Because the kids were, they were all doing their water sports and having fun. And so he comes back from shore and he goes, Beverly, no milk today. The cow is sick.
That is yachting right there.
Island.
Yeah, that is yachting right there. Fresh milk from one cow. The adventurousness.
Right. That's,
I think that I wish that was still, well, I guess it is. It's just not as prevalent as the milk run. You know, the milk run is the Med in the Caribbean. Just great. Two beautiful spots in the world. But I kind of wish some of these people that would, even charter guests, would want to go more far flung. Like, let's go to Thailand, or let's have more boats in Alaska. Let's go to Costa Rica, which is, it's a lot harder for provisioning, but it's way more interesting. I love Europe, but it's not going anywhere. Let's go see some more places. Come on.
No, I get it. I've been there enough on a boat. I agree with you. I would. I was fortunate. I did get to go to Thailand, and I also got to go to Turkey on a yacht, which was unusual.
Yeah.
Then
that's pretty common now, though. I think then it was much more unusual because the lira was in the toilet back then. Like, they had no money. Now they're actually gone through quite a period of prosperity, which I think is coming to an end now, but I'm not as plugged into Turkey as I used to be. During COVID, that was one of the places. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's really, I love Turkey. Turkey's one of my most favorite countries. It's one of the best food I've ever had in my life is in Turkey. Yeah. The shit they do with bread and things they stuff in it, it's like borderline evil. Like, how did you even think of this?
and Istanbul, that market.
Yeah.
Did you get there?
No, we weren't. I don't think I was in Istanbul on a boat. We just go to like Bodrum and cruise around there. But I've been to Istanbul on a motorcycle. I've been there by foot, like as a traveler. I want to fall in love with that place, but I can't. It's too hectic. It's just too much. It's just way too much for me.
But the food. But you have to admit, the food
incredible.
Is
the food. Oh, and I thought it was like. And I spent time in Greece. I was like, oh, it's going to be like Greek food. It's way better. Just don't tell any Greeks I said that. But it is so amazing. It really is the bridge between East and West. Like, the mix of cultures that, like, they had their own empire, the Ottomans. And then the Austro-Hungarian, the Persians, and the Romans. And it's like everyone went through there. You had to. The land bridge. You know, you had to. So cool.
But the flavors. You know, spices, the spice capital of the world to me.
Yeah.
But
beautiful
sight.
What can we talk about to help encourage or help get like greeny chefs on the right path? You know, with their CV. Like, I don't know, how do you feel about, like, I have someone do my CV for me. Like, I just have this woman, she's amazing. I pay her a little bit for updates and just have a nice format, and it's just perfect. Like,
right.
Get a lot of compliments on
it. I highly recommend that. And I have a couple of people I recommend also here in the States, because, you know, yachting industry is one of the few industries that actually has your photograph on it. I mean, think about it. Most resumes, you don't have a photograph. So pictures, food pictures, the right image of you as a chef is very important. And as far as greenies, I encourage them to put any experience with boating, anything at all. Even if you learned to sail a little boat on a lake, you still understand the principle of a boat and handling the lines and things like that. So I encourage them to put any boating experience, any water experience, and you know, of course, traveling. If they like to travel, they can let that be known on the resume too, or languages or anything is encouraging. I have chefs with restaurant experience, and that's always a good thing, but not necessary. And sometimes it actually can hinder, because sometimes chefs in a restaurant get a little lazy, not lazy, but they expect someone else to clean up after them. So I always explain, you are the only one, basically. You have to take care of every aspect of the food, whether the shopping, the carrying on and provisioning and storing. Very
I got to chime in on that one, though. I disagree with you. I think restaurant experience is massively important. And the restaurant chefs, the smart ones, will figure it out. But they have to clean. They have to do everything. They got to, you know, get in there with a toothbrush, the corners of the walk-ins. Because, I mean, that restaurant experience, that's so invaluable in terms of, like, work ethic and just from the difficult restaurants anyway. Like, I don't mean like Joe Schmo's down the road where you got to cook the food and wait the tables. I'm talking about like really high-end restaurants where it's just the stress levels are so high. You're just kind of used to it.
I didn't mean to discourage it at all. I mean, it's very valuable. I agree. Very, very valuable. But it doesn't have to be in your experience. I mean, you could come straight out of culinary school with the right guidance. And that's what I like to do, is try to teach and educate. And, you know, just some basics about the provisioning is the biggest difference, of course, from a restaurant to a yacht. Right. And and being prepared, doing menus, I think, is instrumental with your planning. Have menus already set up, even though it's going to get changed 100 times, as we know. If you
have there's nothing worse than the end of. Let me add a point here for a sec. There's nothing worse than the end of a long day, and you got to do a menu, and you got to pull stuff from the freezer. You're just like, oh crap. It's like you're kind of, you put all your creativity of the day, it's kind of gone.
Yep.
And then you got to come up with this menu. So it's nice to have a stack of those menus just ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. I remember personal experience, talking about that boat that had the walk-in fridge and freezer. We did 27 weeks a year of charters. So we were like back to back.
That's an absurd amount of charters. Like 12 weeks is a normal,
I know.
27 is, wow. How are the tips? Did you just have stacks of like gold pirate coins, or what was going on there?
We were very busy, but I remember, like you said, after the long day and just being exhausted, I remember waking up in the middle of the night, putting on my bathrobe and walking in the walk-in freezer and just standing in there until I figured out what I was going to pull out for the next day.
I've done the same shit. I mean, you're just staring like, oh my God. You can't even remember what you did. You know, you're like, oh, what am I going to do tomorrow?
Exactly. But the cold helps wake you up to reality.
Because you want to get out of there. You're like, I got to go. It's getting cold.
And go back to sleep. And how many times do you cook in your sleep? How many times do you plan a menu in your while you're sleeping? I mean, really, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but I used to cook in my sleep.
I do not do that. The work dreams are the worst. When you wake up, like feeling that you're cheating because you're in bed, like you're sneaking sleep. You know, that is the worst feeling. You're supposed to be. You have a short window to recover. For your mind to rearrange its files into an appropriate way, for your body to rest and heal. And then you wake up with this anxiety of like, I shouldn't be in here. I should be working, because that's all I do is work. Work and sleep, summer in the med.
Yeah. And I learned how to take power naps on yachting.
Oh yeah. Yes, definitely.
More questions.
Yeah. Well, this is the last one. We're getting towards the end here, but, and we kind of touched on already, but what do you think about like a social media presence? Something I wish I did, especially with my Instagram, is just do a separate one just for food. Because right now it's just a mix of just travel and yachts. And I notice a lot of chefs, I think the younger ones or the newer ones, they've just dedicated one just to food. And I think that's a really smart way to make it easy for potential captains, crew agents, management companies. Like, look, this is my repertoire. This is what I've done. And I think that's really visual, right, and so much better than like a text on a resume, right, in terms of what this person has on offer.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think that is happening a lot. I think a lot of people do have those websites and those accounts on their resume. And in fact, there's Facebook groups that these questions come up, and I've been watching those, of course. And someone just posted like 70 photographs of their food, and I commented, "So what is this? And what is this?" And he said, "I have that all on this account. Just go into this website and it shows what everything is." So yes, people, especially the younger chefs and crew members, are using social media to their advantage. And yeah. I think
that's also from the restaurant industry as well. I think just chefs in general are doing that. I don't even think it's an industry thing. I don't think, because I've stumbled upon some people that are, you know, very like prolific, amazing chefs, and they have a very strong like social media presence, which I think it's hugely important. And there's a lot of the old school that grumble like, "Oh, you know, real chefs don't on Instagram, real chef," like, bullshit. Every 1, 2, 3 star chef has a social media account, bro. Like,
right. Yeah,
sorry, well, it passed you by.
But that used to be true. I mean, I have run into so many chefs that they don't update their resume. They don't keep it active, because a chef was a chef and they weren't really IT savvy, but they're learning. They're learning. Yeah. And I'm encouraging them to, you know, update your resume. This is 10 years old, you know, or, you know, even a year old is too old. You know, you need to show what you've been doing, and you need to have photographs of your food. And I actually just had a client recently, an owner, actually a charter guest. And she said, she gave me the name of a chef. You probably know him, Yotam Ottolenghi. Do you know this guy?
I might have been a fan. Yeah, might have used a lot of his amazing recipes. Might have gotten kidnapped by an Arab prince for falafel recipe that I got from that guy.
Oh, there you go.
That's a tale of woe.
So anyways, the charter guest educated me about this chef. And so I ordered the first cookbook I've ordered in 10 years, I swear. And I fell in love with his food. But she said, "This is the kind of food I want on our charter." So, you know, again, you have to know if your people can prepare that food, because the owners, the charter guests, those people, you never say no to them. And I always tell crew, you never say no. You say, "Yes, of course, we can get that." And then you go to the captain and try to figure out how you're going to get it, right? Caviar in St. Lucia? No, it wasn't happening back in the day.
Yeah. You know, it's easier and easier now, for sure. I think it's getting more globalized. Sure. Yeah, as the provisioners grow and the industry grow, and you find out these supply lines, and someone's going to have it and call so-and-so. And especially with WhatsApp groups, and just asking, like, there's a really amazing chef group that I'm a part of. And it's such a valuable resource. And we all try to help each other out. And there's there's greenies on there. There's OGs on there. And you just share and help. And it's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, in back in the time, and of course, there's still many boats that only have one chef. It's something you need to share. You know, you get all these creative ideas and or you need help. And social media is that access to get help. Like you said, I love reading the communication between chefs, because we all love each other, you know, we all want everybody to succeed. And this is a great way to do it, through social media. I love it.
It's I keep thinking of the word community because I felt like I didn't know I felt lonely, but I felt lonely as a chef all these years, especially what like 10 years. I've been doing it 20 years and 10 years as a sole chef. Where you're like, there's right. no one really to talk to about food. You know, maybe there's one stew that gives a shit about food, but that's probably it. Right. You know, if you're lucky right. and then you don't, you can wave at a chef buddy and that's it. And now it's like with social media, you can still yes. stay connected and actually feel like you're part of a community because I'm not a land chef. I can't go to the same three farms, you know, twice a week to get the most perfect stuff or every day. Can't be right. raising the suckling pigs that I want with a, like I want those things, but it's not possible. So I think like as much as some people like to blast social media, like it really gives me a sense of community that I lost. I didn't even know I didn't have it. Yeah. And now I just feel yeah. thankful that it's yeah. there.
I totally agree. I remember standing up on the counter, looking out the galley window to see what boats were coming in. So I knew the chef on that boat and I could go talk right. to him, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. but you know, social media has helped us have that community for sure. It's a great way to put it.
Beverly, before you go, can you tell us like if someone wants to register with you or, you know, use your services, where can they find you?
Well, I have the website, which is bgrantcruisesolutions.com. And right. And then, of course, my email is info@bgrantcruisesolutions.com. And my phone number is always available. I take lots of calls. I am still kind of old fashioned. I would rather talk to people than just email. But I spend a lot of time talking to crew and to captains and owners, and I'm always available, you know, 24/7, yeah. just like always.
and you're a wealth of knowledge and a great mentor, and I love you, and I appreciate our friendship of like 30 years. It's amazing. Like you never know who you're gonna meet and know them for the next part of your life. So thanks for coming on Get the Fork Out. Beverly Grant.
Thank you Good to for see being you. Part of my family. Love you. Take care.
Love you too. Bye.